This is reading a collection of essays by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Stages of Higher Knowledge. It's four essays. This is the last essay, essay four, entitled Inspiration and Intuition. Just as imagination may be called a spiritual seeing, so may inspiration be called a spiritual hearing. Of course, it must be quite clear that the word hearing means here a perception even further removed from sensory hearing in the physical world than sight in the imaginative, in parentheses, astral world is removed from seeing with the physical eyes. It can be said of the imaginative reality's light and color phenomena that the radiant surfaces and colors of sensory objects are as though lifted and released from those objects to float free in space. But this gives only an approximate idea, for space in the imaginative world is in no way like it is in the physical. Those who believe they see before themselves imaginative color pictures, when they are seeing free-floating colored particles in ordinary space, are mistaken. However, the formation of such color representations is a means toward the life of imagination. Those who attempt to place a flower before the mind's eye and then separate everything that does not represent color from that picture, so that an image of the colored surface is separate from the flower and suspended before the soul, can arrive gradually at an imagination through such exercises. This picture itself is not actually an imagination, but more or less a preliminary fantasy suggestion. Imagination, an actual astral experience, exists first when not only the color is wholly lifted apart from the sensory impression, but also when three-dimensional space has fully lost itself. That this is the case can be confirmed only by a certain feeling, which is described by saying that one no longer feels oneself outside, but inside the colored picture, and has the consciousness of partaking of its coming into being. If this feeling is not there, if we remain before the thing as before a sense-bound color picture, then we are dealing not yet with real imagination, but with something fanciful. It should not be said that such fantasy pictures are wholly worthless, however. They can actually be etheric reflections, like shadows, of real astral facts. As such, they have their own value in esoteric scientific training. They can form a bridge to true astral imaginative experiences. A certain danger lurks in the observation only when, as observers, we do not fully apply our sound human judgment at this frontier between the sensory and the suprasensory. It should not be expected that an unfailing test can be given at this frontier, whereby we can differentiate illusion, hallucination, and the fantastic from reality. Such a general rule would surely be comfortable, but comfort is a word that esoteric students should strike from their vocabulary. It can be said only that those who would acquire clarity of discernment in this sphere must already be intent upon it in the ordinary life of the physical world. Those who are not careful in ordinary life to think sharply and clearly will fall a victim to all sorts of illusions on their ascent to higher worlds. Just consider how many snares of everyday life beset sound judgment. How often people do not see clearly what exists, but rather what they desire. In how many cases do people believe something not because they have discerned it, but because it is more acceptable to one's belief? Consider the errors that arise because we do not get to the bottom of something, but form a hasty judgment. All these reasons for deception in ordinary life might be multiplied infinitely. Biased feelings, passion, and so forth, play many tricks on sound judgment. If such errors of judgment in ordinary life are disturbing and often disastrous, they become the greatest conceivable danger to the well-being of suprasensory experience. Beyond advice to do everything possible for one's healthy power of discernment and for sound, independent judgment, no general rule can be given to students for guidance in the higher worlds. Once observers in higher worlds realize the true nature of imagination, they are quickly convinced that the images of the astral world are not mere pictures, but manifestations of spiritual beings. They come to realize that such imaginative pictures relate to spirit or soul beings, just as sensory colors relate to sensory things or beings. Such observers will, of course, have yet much to learn. They must learn to discriminate between color formations that are opaque and those that are quite transparent and inwardly clear and radiant. Indeed, they will perceive formations that continually seem to be producing their colored light anew from within, and thus are not only fully illuminated and transparent, but also radiate light from within. They will link the opaque formations to lower beings, the clear, luminous ones to intermediate entities. The inwardly radiant ones will be for them manifestations of higher spiritual beings. If we would arrive at the truth about the imaginative world, we must not form too narrow a concept of spiritual sight. In that world there are not mere light and color perceptions comparable to the sight experiences of the physical world, but also impressions of heat and cold, of taste and smell, and still other experiences of the imaginative, in quotes, senses, for which the physical world offers no likeness. In the imaginative astral world, impressions of heat and cold are revelations of will and intention on the part of soul and spirit beings. Whether such a being aims at good or evil comes to light in a certain effect of heat or cold. Astral beings can also be tasted or smelled. However, what constitutes the physical element of tone and sound in the actual sense is almost wholly lacking in the imaginative world. In this connection, absolute stillness prevails there. Rather, for the progressing spiritual observer, something quite different is offered, comparable to tone and music, comparable to tone and sound, to music and speech in the sensory world. This higher element steps in when every tone and sound from the outer physical world is wholly hushed. Indeed, when even the faintest inner soul echo from this sphere of the outer world is silenced, then there occurs for the observer what may be called an understanding of the significance of the imaginative experiences. If we were to compare what is now experienced with something in the physical world, we could come only close to explaining the matter by referring to something that does not exist at all in that world. Suppose it were possible to perceive the thoughts and feelings of another person without hearing any words with the physical ear. Such a perception might be comparable to a direct comprehension of the imaginative element called hearing in the spiritual sense. What, in quotes, speaks are the color and light impressions. In lighting up and dimming down, in the color metamorphosis of images and are revealed harmonies and discords that unveil the feelings, representations, and thought life of soul and spirit beings. Just as tone becomes speech in physical human beings, when thought is imprinted in it, so do harmonies and discords of the spirit world grow into manifestations that are definite thought entities. To this end, darkness must fall upon that world if thought is to be revealed in its immediacy. The experience is this. Bright color tones, red, yellow, and orange, are seen to fade away, and it is perceived how the higher world darkens through green to blue and violet. At the same time, a waxing of inner will energy is experienced, full spatial and temporal freedom is experienced, and there is a feeling of being in motion. Certain linear forms and shapes are experienced. These are not experienced as though seen to be drawn before one in any spatial expanse, but rather as though in continuous movement every single curve, every form, was followed by the I capital. In fact, the I is felt as both the artist and the drawing material. Every linear direction, every shift in position, is at the same time an experience of the I. The I, stirred to motion, is recognized as connected with the world's creative forces. The laws of the world are no longer something that the eye perceives outwardly, but a truly miraculous fabric that it is helping to weave. Esoteric science designs all kinds of symbolic drawings and pictures. When these really correspond to fact and are not mere invented figures, they are based on the observer's experiences in higher worlds, which are to be viewed as described. Thus the world of inspiration is placed within the imaginative world. When the imaginations begin to unveil their meanings in silent speech to the observer, the world of inspiration arises within the imaginative world. Physical reality is a manifestation of the world that the spiritual observer penetrates in this way. The physical world, accessible to the senses, and to the sensory-bound intellect, is merely the outer surface. For example, a plant, seen with physical senses and physical intellect, is not the whole being of that plant. One who knows only this physical plant resembles a being who might be able to perceive a person's fingernail, while perception of the whole person is not available. But the structure and being of the fingernail can be understood only when explained by the whole nature of the person. Thus, in fact, the plant is comprehensible only when we know what pertains to it, just as the whole human nature relates to a person's fingernail. But what is related to the plant cannot be found in the physical world. The plant is related to something fundamental that can be unveiled by only imagination in the astral world, and further to something that will be revealed only through inspiration in the spirit world. Thus a plant as a physical organism is the revelation of a being comprehensible by imagination and inspiration. From this it is clear how a path opens up for the observer of higher worlds that has its origin in the physical world. Specifically, we can begin with the physical world and from its manifestations rise to the higher beings sustaining them. If we begin with the animal kingdom, we can rise by this means into the imaginative world. If we begin with the plant world, spirit observation will lead us through imagination to the world of inspiration. If our path is taken in the realities of imagination and inspiration, we soon find beings and truths never revealed in the physical world. We must not, therefore, think that in this way we come to know only beings of the higher worlds that have physical manifestations. Those who have entered the imaginative world come to know a multitude of beings and events, realities of which those who see only the physical have no inkling. To be sure, there is another way. It does not begin with the physical world. It makes us clairvoyant directly in the higher regions of existence. For many, this method might have more power of attraction than the previous one indicated. But for our life conditions, only an ascent from the physical world should be chosen. It requires self-renunciation of the observer, however, if one is to begin by examining the surrounding physical world to accumulate knowledge and especially experience. In any case, this is the method best suited to our present-day cultural conditions. The other method presupposes a prior acquisition of soul qualities that are very difficult to attain under modern conditions of life. Although such soul qualities have been sharply and clearly stressed repeatedly in past writings, most people still have no idea, or at most an inadequate one, of the degree to which these qualities, for example selflessness and devoted love, must be acquired for attainment of the higher worlds, without starting from the firm ground of the physical. If anyone were to be awakened to the higher worlds without the requisite degree of the corresponding soul qualities, the result would be unimaginable misery. Now, we must not believe, however, that the soul qualities just described can be eliminated by those who start with the physical world and its experiences. To believe this would also be an error, having serious consequences. But such a start allows for the gradual acquisition of these qualities in the measure and above all the form that is possible given the conditions of our present life. Another thing comes into consideration in this regard. If we begin with the physical world, as indicated, a living connection is retained with this physical world in spite of the ascent into higher worlds. A full understanding continues for all that happens in it, as well as the full energy to work in it. Indeed, this understanding and energy increase in a most helpful way, precisely through knowledge of the higher worlds. In every area of life, even in what seems most ordinarily practical, a knower of the higher worlds will work better and more usefully than one who does not know, provided one has preserved a living connection with physical reality. But those who awake in the higher spheres of existence without starting from the physical world are too readily estranged from life. They become hermits, confronting others without understanding or sympathy. Indeed, some people of incomplete development in this sense, not of course those with perfect development, even look down with a certain disdain at experiences of the physical world, with feelings of superiority and so on. Instead of heightened sympathy toward the world, such people become spiritually hardened and self-seeking. Truly, such temptation is not slight, and those striving for ascent into the higher realities would do well to pay attention to it. From inspiration, the spiritual observer may rise to intuition. In terms of esoteric science, this word denotes in many ways the exact opposite of the way it is often used in ordinary life. In the ordinary sense, intuition denotes a notion dimly felt to be true, but one that nonetheless lacks a clear conceptual definition. We see in that meaning a preliminary step toward knowing, not knowing itself. An idea of this nature may, according to that definition, illuminate a great truth like a flash of lightning, but it can initially have value as knowledge when based on conceptual judgment. Sometimes, also, intuition designates something in quotes felt as truth, of which one is fully convinced, but which one will not weigh down with intellectual judgment. People who become acquainted with spiritual scientific knowledge often say, quote, "That was always clear to me, intuitively," close quote. All this must be put aside completely if the term intuition is to maintain its true significance as intended here. In this application, intuition is not a mode of cognition that lags in clarity behind intellectual knowledge, but one that far surpasses it. With inspiration, the experiences of the higher worlds speak their meaning. The observer lives in the qualities and actions of the beings of these higher worlds. If, as described, we follow the linear shape of a figure with our eye, capital, we know that we are not within the being itself, but within its qualities and functions. In imaginative cognition, we actually experience a feeling of not remaining outside, but of being inside the color images. But we know with equal clarity that those color images are not independent beings themselves, but qualities of such beings. With inspiration, we are conscious of becoming one with the activities of such beings, or the manifestations of their will. In intuition, we merge, for the first time, our self into that of self-contained beings. This cannot happen in the right way unless the emergence takes place not by the effacement, but by completely maintaining our own being. Any loss of oneself in another being is harmful. Therefore only the I, highly fortified within itself, can plunge into another being without damage. We grasp something intuitively only when the feeling has arisen within which a being is expressing itself, and whose nature and inner content are as one's own I. If we examine a stone with our outer senses, and try to understand its peculiarities with the intellect, and through common scientific resources, we learn about only the outer aspect of that stone. As spiritual observers, we proceed to imaginative and inspired knowledge. By dwelling within inspiration, we can reach an additional feeling, which may be characterized as follows. Suppose you observe a man on the street. First, he makes a fleeting impression upon you as the observer. Later, you become better acquainted with him, and a moment arrives when you become friends, so that soul opens to soul. When the veils of the soul fall in this way, and one eye confronts the other, such an experience is comparable to the experience of a spiritual observer when a stone appears at first as only an outer manifestation, and advances to something related to the whole stone, as a fingernail to a whole human body. It lives itself out as an eye, like one's own eye. This kind of knowing, which leads into the innermost nature of beings, is attained for us first in intuition. In the discussion of inspiration was mentioned the transformation that the spiritual observer's inner soul constitution must undergo in order to arrive at this mode of cognition. In this connection, it has been said, for example, that a false conclusion must extend its effects not only to the intellect, but also to the sensory nature, that it must cause grief and pain, and that the observer must systematically cultivate such an inner experience. Of course, as long as such pain springs from the sympathies and antipathies of the eye and from biased attitudes, preparation for inspiration cannot be considered sufficient. Such involvement of the soul is far removed from the inner sympathy that the eye must feel for the pure truth, as truth, if it would arrive at the stated goal. It cannot be overemphasized that every kind of overriding interest in ordinary life, such as pleasure and pain in relation to truth and error, must be silenced first, and then a wholly different kind of interest, with no self-seeking, must enter before anything can be done toward cognition through inspiration. This one quality of the inner soul life is, however, only one means of preparation for inspiration. There are unlimited others that must be added to it. As spiritual observers refine themselves more in relation to what has already served for inspiration, they will be better equipped to approach intuition. That's the end of essay number 4 and the end of the book, The Stages of Higher Knowledge, by Rudolf Steiner.